Well, it's good to be back, as I said before. I'm sure you were well taken care of. I hope you didn't end up singing the same hymns two Sundays in a row. I thought of checking with Bev, and then I thought, well, but they're all good hymns, so we'll just sing them twice in a row if we do, and we'll be fine. Well, this morning, we're going to be looking at our First Peter passage, and just to set your mind at ease, we're not going to spend any time other than the time we're spending right now, trying to figure out exactly what it means where Jesus went and preached to the spirits in prison. And we're not going to talk about that because I don't know what it means. I have lots of company. Nobody really knows what it means. There's nothing wrong with speculation. But it's not really what we do here. One of the things that I was mentioning to the folks at Knox is that there's lots of different ways that the Bible is made use of. And they're all good. A friend of mine, I just got back from a multi-day conference on the meaning of the word atonement. Multi-day conference on the atonement. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not for everyone. It's not for very many of us, actually. And it's important. The fruit of that kind of very in-depth and subtle deliberation often makes its way into the church, where we are now, to our profit. But that doesn't mean that we have to talk about it here. There are other things that we can do. We can go into the Bible clause by clause, and it's a very fascinating and gratifying experience. I'm not convinced it's the kind of thing you do this way. I think it's better off done in a round table with a smaller group of you. And once again, the benefits of that frequently come back to the larger community, to the larger congregation. But what we do when we're meeting here together is, as best we can, listening to the Spirit, because you're part of that process as well. You're part of the discerning process of what we're going to talk about. And we look at the texts for the day and try and come up with something that communicates and connects with most of us and gives us insight into the nature of God or the personality of God, or helps us live our lives better, gives us insight into ourselves. There's all kinds of things. And one of the reasons why so many of my sermon titles have questions is because I honestly think this is a place to come and get answers about things. And sometimes they're more rhetorical, like today's. Goodness is rewarded, isn't it? And of course the answer is, well, yes. And ultimately the answer is goodness is always rewarded. No good deed is ever lost from God. It will always be rewarded. It's just our context, our field of view might be too short, perhaps, to see the reward. But why would we even talk about that? Well, we're talking about it because Peter talked about it. And I think there is some real value in us spending some time looking at goodness, doing what we are asked to do by God, what our internal conscience says is a good thing to do. Well, when we look at our very first couple of verses, St. Peter writes, "Who is going to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed." Now, apparently the Greek, if we want to get into there, that particular conditional construction suggests that that is about as unlikely as possible, but it's still possible. And it's true. The vast majority of the time, when you do good things, the reward is there. When you treat people well, when you are polite, they are polite back. When you obey the law protects you. And the vast majority of the time, when you do good things, exactly what we expect to happen will happen. But it's not always the case. One of the most demoralizing experiences for any parent or anyone who's interacting on a regular basis with children is that moment when the child comes home and realizes that this is not always the case. You've taught your children or the child in your care, whether it's a grandchild or a niece or a nephew, whatever it is, that you know, you be nice to people and they will be nice back to you. And that is the way it works most of the time. But then that day comes. It always comes. When the child comes home and says, "I was nice to somebody in the playground and they were mean back. I shared with somebody and they laughed at me." Whatever it might be, their good deed has not been rewarded. Well, there's that secular proverb, "No good deed goes unpunished," that we sort of keep at the back of our minds when we think of this sometimes. But that's a terrible moment for the child, and it's terrible for the parent, especially fathers. At least this one. And no, I did not actually consider going and punching some grade 2 or 1 or whatever it happened the first time. I was very tempted to go and point out to them how unkind this was. Perhaps go to their parents and say, what's wrong with you? Except, of course, what's wrong with them is what's wrong with me. We're all humans. It's just the way it is. Goodness isn't rewarded always. And when we look through the rest of this passage and when we look at Peter's letters, we see that this is a bit of a theme that comes up. And if we drop down to verse 17, we read, it is better, if it is God's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. Peter does point out here and there that suffering for doing evil is just justice. You know, get over it. Yeah, this is not what we're talking about here. Peter has got no interest in you being punished for what you should be punished for. What Peter's trying to do is give us a bit of encouragement or broaden our way of thinking to open up the possibility that suffering can be God's will. One of the things that we run into on an ongoing basis as people is this desperate desire we have to simplify things. And we try to get everything into an either or, black and white, yes, no. And that makes sense because it's easier. It makes our life easier. And it's easy for us to say that suffering is bad, period. That suffering is always bad, that suffering has no upside, particularly not as it relates to God. Because we feel that if a good God who loves us allows us to suffer, then there must be something wrong with him. Possibly something wrong with us, but still, there's something amiss there in a way that causes us problems. Well, philosophically, it's sometimes referred to as the law of the excluded middle, or a false dichotomy, where there's more options than yes or no. When you suffer, it's not that you're evil, and it's not that God doesn't care. Sometimes, it is God's will. It's even better, according to Peter, that sometimes we suffer. Well, how can that be? That's just dumb. Peter got it wrong. That's okay if we think that. There's nothing wrong with thinking that now and then. We read things in the Bible that we don't like. Don't pretend you like them. If you don't like them, you don't like them. But then figure out why. And in this case, we realize that, no, actually, Peter isn't being dumb. Peter's got a hold of something very, very important that most of us have actually experienced, but sometimes we forget. There's a very good chance that every single one of us in this room has something that happened to us in our past that any rational person would describe as suffering. I'm not talking about small trivial things. I'm talking about significant things. The loss of people, the loss of hopes, whatever they might be. In our past, we have something that we looked at then as a catastrophe, and all the people around us said, yeah, you're right, that's a catastrophe. But once again, for probably almost all of us here, if not all of us, we will look back at that event, whatever it was, and we will see that it engendered growth in us that at this point we're not willing to give up. Does that mean that the catastrophe wasn't a catastrophe, that it was somehow good? Of course not. It doesn't mean that at all. What it means is that good arose from the catastrophe. It taught us something. It created a different way of thinking for us that we don't want to give up. We're now more compassionate, perhaps, because of what happened to us then. We're more understanding. We're more patient. Whatever it might be, we look back and we say, that terrible thing, which is terrible, period, had this good outcome in my life. Suffering, in that particular case, might have been God's will. That might have been the purpose. We need to remember that God's will and God's knowledge and God's wisdom is so much larger than ours, that frequently we can't see the outcomes. We can't see the good that God will bring from evil, from the suffering in our lives. Sometimes we do. Always in retrospect. Always. We look back and say, oh, I see. The good that I now experience, the whatever it might be, came from that. I really wish I could have got it some other way. But now that I've got it, I don't want to give it up. God is able to do that. God is able to redeem our suffering. And Peter makes it fairly clear here that sometimes it happens because God wills that we suffer. And once again, for doing good. Peter is not talking about the suffering that you go through when you get a speeding ticket. You get a speeding ticket because you deserve it. As I said, that's justice. Calling that suffering and looking for, you know, the internal benefit from there. That's not what Peter's talking about. Nothing wrong with looking at what you can learn from getting a speeding ticket. I'd recommend slowing down. But, you know, there are other things you might learn from there about patience or about planning. But Peter's talking about when you do good. When you reach out to help someone and they throw it back in your face. When you assist someone in a project or in a whatever it might be to reach some goal, and when the goal is reached, they talk about how wonderful they are because they did it, and they completely ignore you. That's a kind of suffering. It's unpleasant. We don't like it. We don't want it. Does that mean we should stop doing good things? Well, of course not, because most of the time it doesn't work that way. Peter's talking about the exception here, not the rule. But he's helping us remember that there are exceptions. There will be times when you will do everything you're supposed to do, and you'll do it from the very best motives that you have, and you will get nothing but grief out of it. And Peter says, sometimes that's better. Sometimes that's God's will. Now, does that mean that God carefully maneuvers us into moments of suffering? I'm not entirely sure that's even necessary. We live in a fallen world. The world we live in, beautiful as it is, and it's really beautiful today, is fundamentally broken, and we all know that. We know that the things in this world that are so right are always slightly tainted by evil, by sin. God doesn't have to maneuver us necessarily into these areas. They're just going to happen. We'd like to think that everybody responds to good with good in return, but think of yourself. Is that something that you could say you've always done? And I'm not saying that you're not, but if you are someone who can say that, you're very unusual. Most of us can't. We have bad days. We misunderstand. We're impatient. We have a headache. The person we're talking to is wearing a shirt we don't like. Often the reasons are trivial. But the suffering's real. One of the other ways that we as human beings sometimes will put things into categories that are unhelpful is that we'll look at people who suffer in other places, perhaps suffer for what they believe, where they are persecuted, where their lives are in danger, where their property is destroyed. And we look at that and say, that's suffering. What happens to me is nothing. Well, don't do that, because what happens to you matters. It matters to you, and if it matters to you, it matters to God. Does that mean the suffering is equivalent? Well, of course not. But the things that you suffer, particularly when, as Peter says, you suffer for doing good, you try to help people and they just make everything worse, is still suffering. And it's still something that you can learn through, that God can be glorified through. But it won't work quite as well that way if you try to pretend that it didn't happen or that it doesn't matter. That's one of the ways that many of us deal with this, the return of evil for good, as it's sometimes described, is we pretend it doesn't matter. We try to tell ourselves and the people around us, well, we didn't really care. Except, of course, we do. We're built to care. We're built in an internal way to see that justice matters and it's important. And that when you reach out to someone in friendship and they respond in anger, that there's something wrong there. That we've been injured. Maybe they are too. Maybe there's other factors involved. But don't try and convince yourself that when you've been hurt, that you haven't been hurt. It's a bad way to handle your body. It's a bad way to handle your spirit. When you've been injured, do something about the injury. And one of the ways that we do something about these sorts of injuries, that when our goodness isn't rewarded, is not that we pretend it didn't happen, not that we hate the person that has injured us in return, but rather we look at it and say, this could be a time when God's will is that we suffer for doing good. And God's will is perfect. God's will is a demonstration of his love for us, not his indifference, not his lack of awareness, but his love for us. So when we suffer, in this context, when we suffer for doing what is right, for doing what is good, God's will not be thwarted. He will bring good from that, no matter what. The reward is always there, just not always where we look for it or when we look for it. If you have one of those catastrophes in your past that has led to growth that you wouldn't give up, as I mentioned before, if it's not too painful, throw yourself back into that for a moment and think, would you have chosen that at that point, even knowing the growth that's coming? Probably not. I know I wouldn't. I would never choose for my house to catch fire. I would never choose to have my first daughter die. I would never choose to have my parents die young. I would never choose any of these things. And I reel them off not to make me look special, but because you all have these just the same. Some of them are just as catastrophic to you as they are to me, some more so, because we're all unique how we process these things. In the midst of those, we would never choose them. We would say that it's not worth it because we can't see into the future. But we don't have to. Our faith says that God, who loves us, whose will for us is perfect, will work this out in his time, in his way, in a way that we will one day understand. We may not understand it in this life. The context of our lifetime might be too short to see the benefits that come from the suffering we go through. And we have to be okay with that. It doesn't happen very often. Usually it appears that when we go through these things, we do see the benefits at some point. We do see how God was at work then. But if we don't see that yet, it doesn't mean it's not coming. It doesn't mean it's not there. Goodness is rewarded, isn't it? Yes, it is. Always, without exception, goodness is never forgotten by God. The good that we do is never looked upon by God with indifference. The good we do matters always. The reward, maybe we'll see it today, maybe tomorrow. Maybe it will take eternity for us to see that moment when we chose not to respond in anger, that moment that we reached out in kindness to someone we didn't know very well, or perhaps someone we knew very well, and we saw nothing that came from that other than rejection. Maybe eternity will show that it changed that person in ways that perhaps they didn't even realize, or at least didn't realize you were the source. Sometimes there are hard things about the Christian life. And honestly, for me, this is one of them. I like answers. I like answers, and I like them fast. I do really well on multiple choice exams, because to me, the idea of a question is to answer it right now. When I have a question about my suffering, I want the answer now. I want God to say, okay, you're not going to see the results till later, but these are the results you'll see. Sometimes we're called to just be faithful people. To realize that this notion that we will always be rewarded, that the good that we do will always be acknowledged by God, sometimes it's a matter of faith. And sometimes faith is hard. But goodness is what we're called to. It's one of the fruit of the Spirit. It's one of the things that we can all be, and we can all be more of. And it's always going to be rewarded. Not sometimes, not once in a while, not even almost all the time, but always. Amen.